Time now for WEEI Football Sunday with Arcand, Mego, and Shime. Now, WEEI Football Sunday.
Well, good morning. Welcome in. It's NFL Football Sunday here on WEEI. Christian Arcand, Megan Ottolini, Chris Shime here with you until 12:35. Not going to get a full show again today either because of the Red Sox, the still somehow alive Red Sox, taking over the airwaves with the Mass Mutual pregame show at 12:35. But until then, we have a jam-packed show for you right now. We got the Polar Coaster coming up in about a half hour. Fitzy will be joining us live from the parking lot along with Tommy Curran. We'll get Wiggy's Keys. Andy Hart calls in. We'll have the inactives at 11:30. But let's go ahead and start with, it's been a week. The Patriots now 1-0. Going into this home game now, they have a chance, a lot of people think, a very good chance to go 2-0 to start the year. How are you feeling about this game? How are you feeling about this team, Mego?
I'm feeling much better about this team than I thought I would last week at this time. I am just going to start off by saying this is a game that the Patriots should win. I know that they're the underdog, and I know that they were a one-trick pony offensively last week with the run game. They basically took what they were given, and that made sense. But I think if you believe that this defense is going to be able to win you any games this season, any games, this is exactly the kind of game that you're looking at for your defense to prove that they can do that. And the offense, are you going to get away with having as many rushing yards as you did last week and just leaning on Ramondre Stevenson and your offensive line as it looked last week? I don't know if you can do that again, but this is the most vulnerable quarterback that you're going to see until November. Mm. And so if you subscribe to the idea that defense can win games in the NFL still, then the Patriots should win this game today.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I am very much in the same boat. I think this is a huge defensive game. I think this is the day that Keon White now becomes a household name for people. Like, this to me screams Seattle's offense is so bad. They were putrid against that Denver Broncos team last week. I mean, two safeties in the first half. They couldn't block for anything. Kenneth Walker was the whole reason they had any offense last week. This is the day that Keon White becomes a national name. Like, Belichick and Chris Long can talk about him on Inside the NFL, but this is the day where, like, ESPN will talk about him tomorrow because of how much chaos he creates.
I watched that Inside the NFL repeat this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Clark, that outfit?
Yeah.
He's unbelievable. Like, I've never seen a human being dressed like that before.
He is. He's got some good fits. I got to give him credit.
It was really impressive. It was like shocking. Like, they cut to him and I was like, oh my goodness. And then they started talking about Keon White. My big thing with this game is I think these two teams are mirror images of each other in many, many different ways. New coaches, veteran quarterbacks, run game really carried the day in that first week, and tough defenses, not much so far in the passing game that we've seen so far. But that's, I think, where it ends, because If the run game here gets shut down by the Seattle Seahawks and the Patriots can't run the ball the way we just heard Jerod Mayo say, everybody knows we're going to do it, this is the way it's going to go, you have to stop it. What if they do? And I feel like if they stop the run, the Patriots are going to have to get real creative while the Seahawks won't. And I think that's the main narrative of this game right now and what we're going to see. And especially if Walker's out. I mean, that's going to be a big play a big role in this as well. If he's not playing, and he was doubtful on the last injury report, so that generally means you're not playing. If he's out, then that's going to be forcing the issue, I think, for Seattle in a way that it won't be for the Patriots. But let's just assume here that Seattle, who does have a good defense, is able to come out and maybe not stop the run completely, but limit it. Force Brissett to get out of the pocket, force him to throw, maybe contain him a little bit better than the Bengals did last week, and try and make him go downfield. The Seahawks can do that. I mean, we know that the Seahawks
can they?
That.
This Seahawks team is very different.
They didn't do it against Denver. Denver is a very good secondary, one of the best secondaries in the league. And just personnel-wise, yes, I mean, they can.
I don't see that. Like, I don't think the Seahawks team is that good. Like, when you saw this schedule before the season started, you looked for the New England Patriots. This was easily the most gettable game in the first half of the season. It's not even close. And it's because rookie head coach coming west to east, a defense that has a lot of questions that can sometimes get after the pass, like, get after it in the pass rush, but not consistently enough. The secondary has a lot of questions, even though I love guys like Devon Witherspoon.
Secondary. I mean, it is. That's a good three corners, I'd say, as any in the league.
Yeah, but they don't play great. great. Like, it's weird. They haven't played up to their potential, and they didn't last year. They haven't so far this year. I don't know. I think that there is an opportunity here where, you know, you see Alex Van Pelt say, oh, there were plays to be had. I didn't call my full play sheet last week. And you hear Jerod Mayo be like, oh, yeah, there were guys open in the pass game. And this, to me, seems like more of a game where you can kind of be an all-around offense. Of course, you're going to lean on the run, but I think you have an opportunity to really kind of open things up today.
I agree. It's just when you're opening things up, my question is, do they have the personnel to open it up the way that they want to and be able to execute that? That's the giant question mark with the Patriots offense, where, yeah, it's a nice idea to be able to have Tyquan Thornton. Like, he's kind of like that Friends episode. Do you remember where they play the football game on
Friends.
Thanksgiving? Okay, do you know what I'm talking about, Arkan? And they basically just
keep telling Rachel,
go deep because they're never going to throw to her.
Right.
And that's kind of how it feels with Tyquan Thornton. It's like, okay, Tyquan, you're so fast. Just go route. Go down there. You know? And it's hard to make other teams believe that that's an actual option when you don't have any other guys who people know are good weapons that get outside the numbers. You know, you really want to see DeMario, or I really want to see DeMario Douglas, Pop Douglas more involved. I'm really curious about Polk, and I just want to see more of him from a curiosity perspective. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, does that open it up enough, as you said, Sean?
Well, I also think, too, you had made the point last week you thought Hunter Henry might have a big game. Mm-hmm. I think we might have been never wrong, only early. Like, I think we were just a week early.
He did have a big game, to be fair. I mean, he saved Jacoby Brissett.
True.
That
was, fair yes. point. Yes, but like this week,
I think statistically, yeah.
I think he could be how you kind of open up the passing game a little bit, because he's going to be able to work the middle of the field and work with his size and just be a security blanket for Jacoby Brissett. So you're going to look to take those shots more down the field, that 15 to 20 yards down the field look with the Tyquan Thorntons and the Jalen Polks and the Pop Douglases, but then utilizing Hunter Henry in the middle of the field and kind of in that short to intermediate area and really kind of force the issue.
One guy that we know we won't be seeing today is Chukwuma Okorafor. This is an interesting story, I think,
strange.
As Okorafor was pulled out of that game very early on, and that was being put on a special list for players who may not want to play football anymore by choice, which after getting benched and calling out, was it Matt Canada last year?
Yes.
Was his coach with the Steelers. He got benched and called him out, got benched for Broderick Jones, who I wanted the Patriots to draft, tackle out of Georgia last year, but they didn't. That was a big problem for him. He gets cut, comes over here, gets the starting left tackle job and is yanked immediately, and now all of a sudden reconsidering this whole pro football thing. That means big dose of Adarian Lowe today, and listen, they were good enough to win the game last week, but I don't think that was any great game for Adarian Lowe.
It certainly wasn't. I think Adarian Lowe has been able to like keep his head above water in what he's been tasked with, especially compared to last season. Very small sample size this season. But what scares me is how much, if he can handle the snap count, really. If he can stay out there, because it was only a week and a half ago that you had Jerod Mayo talking about the conditioning level, and these guys pride themselves on that. He's like, run to the hill.
Take him to the hill.
Take him to the hill.
Like, take him to the house, kid.
Yeah, nice idea. But if something happens to Lowe in mid-game, or he just needs to step out for a couple snaps, then you start finding yourself in a really dicey position with Chooks out. And I feel like we just need to redefine that list, the left exempt list, mm-hmm. as like the soul searching list. Like, he's okay, so he decides a couple days before the game that he's just not gonna, or a day before the game, like, don't know if this is for me anymore.
Yeah, like the come to Jesus list.
Exactly.
The Cliff Kingsbury list. I need to go to Thailand. I got
exactly.
a one-way ticket to Thailand.
It's the eat, pray, love list.
Yes, exactly. I think this offensive line was good last week. Like, I thought they won the battle in the trenches, and I think they can do that again this week. I don't think this is a team that is gonna dominate you. This isn't like the 49ers or even the Jets that you're gonna see in the next couple weeks. This is a very manageable game, and I think if you kind of control it the way you did last week, you put yourself in a really good position.
Yeah, listen, that's it's going to be a big part of this, who wins the game in the trenches here, as the Patriots and the Seahawks, two teams that have rookie head coaches who are defensive-minded, which in 2024 is a pretty unusual thing. You don't see that quite as often, especially when it's two younger guys. Usually it's like an old guy like Harbaugh or something like that comes in, and you think, okay, well, here's a big old-time defense
to
or whatever.
To be a defensive head coach, you either have to be old or ripped.
Yeah, pretty much.
No in-between.
It's got to be one or the other. And here we are. We have these two, and Jerod Mayo's ripped, obviously, but like we have these two
exactly.
younger guys, and that
is
Baltimore.
Is he ripped or built?
Jerod Mayo?
Yeah.
Both.
I would say,
I mean, I haven't seen him in the locker room.
This is no disrespect to Jerab Mayo, but when I hear ripped, there's a connotation where I'm thinking more
like me, right?
Coaching level Troy Brown.
Okay, so maybe
there's a lot of definition.
Yoked up? Is that a better term?
Yoked is
up?
Right.
Okay,
like
cool.
Dante Hightower was ripped.
Yeah.
There was a definition there.
Like,
is that what yoked means?
No, I think yoked is more like you're an ox.
Yeah, you got the broad shoulders.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You got a big, strong build.
Okay. What about like swole?
Swole, I think, has a little bit of a fatty connotation to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You can be swole and fat at the same time?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Huh.
I think of swole as like baseball players trying to excuse why they're carrying so much water weight.
Ooh, okay.
Like John Kruk was swole.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Prince Fielder was swole.
Prince Fielder, definitely swole.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, got it. All right, well,
okay,
there you
are. I'm glad we clarified this.
Yeah. I'm glad we did, too. With two defensive coaches and two guys who really seem to be pushing the idea of conditioning and all that, take them to the hill. I know the Seahawks, same kind of thing. They were talking about that after their game, too, and they ran it right down Denver's throat at the end of that game, same way the Patriots did. It seems like you're going to get what you said, Shyam, a big defensive game, like a lot of defense here.
Grindy.
If that's the case, you like the Patriots defense?
Yeah, I like the Patriots defense a lot more than Seattle's defense.
You almost said love.
Yeah, I did.
I heard that.
I'm gonna pump the brakes just a hair. It is only week one. Don't want to overreact too much, but I like it. I like it a lot. I like them a lot better than Seattle's. I did before the season started, and then last week kind of confirmed that bias. And I'm confident in this front. I think Devon Godshaw is going to really help you stop the run, and Keon White's going to be able to get after the quarterback. I mean, he made things kind of messy for Joe Burrow at times, and then this secondary is going to be pretty good. I'm really curious. The matchup for me is I want to see Christian Gonzalez on DK Metcalf. I want to see what
looks like. I think you're going to see that.
Yeah, and I'm excited. I want to see. It's a very different style of receiver than a guy like Jamar Chase. I want to see that matchup. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
I also think that if there's an edge to be had between these two defenses, especially when you're talking about the game up front, that the continuity remains a really big part of what this defense is building on. Like, they're not starting out in a new scheme from Baltimore or anything like that. They're basically, they have a lot of the same guys that have been there for a couple years now. Like, I talked to Anfernee Jennings in the locker room for a little bit, and you get this sense that, like, yeah, there have been the starters that have been playing over the last year and a half, 2 years, but it's like a real next man up mentality, and we use that as a big cliche, but the depth that they have at a lot of their positions defensively is the polar opposite of what's happening on the offensive line on the other side of the ball. Basically, it's like, okay, you're out, move in, no big deal. And that's why I think you saw last week, it's like, okay, Matthew Judon's not there, they are still able to get after it in the pass rush, and it's okay.
Do we expect the crowd to play a factor today?
Not really.
In what way?
In the sense of a home field advantage.
Has it really ever?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, it's a new day, right? I mean, it's not Tom Brady's Patriots here where you know they're just going to win at home.
It's beautiful out, I think it'll be a good turnout.
I think the people will be juiced up a little bit. Like, you might hear it early, but I think that might fade pretty quick. Because the
Seahawks are going to go up big?
No, just because of the kind of style of the game, right? It's going to be slow. It's going to be punts. It's going to be defense. It's not going to be high scoring. So I just think, you know, you could lose a lot of attention.
Shut up. You want people to go to the game.
Sorry.
You're coming out for punts.
Hey, whatever. It doesn't affect us, really. So, you know, go to the game. Don't go to the game. Whatever.
I'll be at home watching.
617-779-7937 is the phone number if you'd like to join the conversation. We will be going to the poll and the polar coaster, courtesy of Megan Ottolini, and that is expectations for this team. If they start the year, gasp, 2-0. How about that? And then, you know, the conversation naturally will switch to what happens when they start 3-0. And, hey, no Christian McCaffrey. How about 4-0 to start the year? You know what? How about they go 17-0? Would that change your expectations?
A little bit.
I think it probably would. By the way, speaking of expectations, some tremendous organizational trolling as Malcolm Butler is going to be the guy ringing the bell today. First of all, we'll get into this with Fitzy because I know he has a lot to say about it. But in terms of an organizational troll, I cannot say that word today for some reason.
I don't know what you're trying to say there.
Organizational. Troll job. I'd say that's right up there. I mean, that's about as good as all the 28-3 stuff with the Falcons is good. But this hurts.
But
this
does it still hit the same
fans. To Seattle fans? Yes.
Maybe to the fans, but like to the team, like there's no Pete Carroll. Basically, nobody on that roster is still on this team. Like, it's just, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't quite hit as hard as we'd like. It does. It is a total shot at Seahawks fans, but for the actual teams, I don't think it matters as much.
Yeah, it's more about trolling the fans, I'd say. And are the fans really paying attention, sorry, to the keeper of the light?
No.
When they're watching from Seattle?
Probably not. Although they will.
Do they even know what it is?
They'll have him up there. They'll show him on camera on the broadcast, I think. Yeah, right?
Although Seattle fans will be leaving brunch. They won't even see that part.
Some old fisherman shakes his fist. Yeah. Like, that Malcolm
right
Butler.
Right, and Pike throws a fish, and then he's like, darn you, Malcolm Butler.
Malcolm Moore's up there like, oh, man, that's uncool, guys. 617-779.
That is very mean.
7937 is the phone number. Let's get what's trending here with Chris Scheinman. When we come back, we will take a ride on the polar coaster here with Megan Ottolini. Well, it's election season, and that means we're taking the temperature of the audience, the fan base in general, a fan base that I don't think had a lot of optimism coming into this season about what this Patriots team would be, what this season would be, and then all of a sudden week one happened, and now sky's the limit. Mego, what's going on in the polls?
This is the emotional polar coaster. I put this out yesterday. Over 1,000 votes now. If the Patriots start out 2-0, do your expectations for their season change? We have no winning at 62%, but 38% of fans say yes. And I will say Chris Brockman, who I guess is part of the Rich Eisen show, quote tweeted this and says, anyone who answers yes is a moron.
What?
So that's his opinion.
Chris Brockman, he's the other guy, right? He's the other guy who's there. Yeah, I've heard he interviewed, he asked Belichick something weird one year, didn't he?
Oh, yeah,
am I thinking of the right guy? Maybe not. Anyway, so he says if anyone says no.
No, if anyone who answers yes, that their expectations will change with the Patriots going 2-0, you're a moron.
Okay. How?
His words, not mine.
Well, you don't know what the expectations are, first of all. Vegas everybody total has different expectations. Yeah.
Their Vegas total was under 4.5. If you originally thought, oh, yeah, they're not going to win five games this year.
Which is what I thought. Yeah.
They start 2-0. You could easily be like, oh, they might win six games this year. Like, how is that any? That's absolutely a change of opinion.
Well, let's start this here, Scheim. What were your expectations for the season, and will they change if it's 2-0?
So, for me, my answer is no, but I expected the Patriots to win around 7 games. Like, that's kind of where I was at.
Really?
Coming in. Yeah. Like, I thought this team was
quite optimistic.
Yeah. I was, especially
you had them winning 7 games this year.
Yeah, especially
all right,
because
yours wouldn't change, sure.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, mine wouldn't change, but someone like Arcand, who had them pretty down in the dumps, or Andy Hart, who had them Mr. 0-17.
I would say his expectations have to change.
Yes, exactly. So, I think it's kind of dumb to suggest that, like, just because you say, yes, my expectations changed, you're a moron. That's kind of silly.
Maybe he was saying if you had expectations that they would be bad, you're a moron, right? Maybe that's what he meant.
Or if he thinks, like, if he's going radical, like, now you think they're going to be Super Bowl contenders. Like, yeah, of course, that's moronic, but...
Let's not even say Super Bowl contenders. Let's say if you think that there's any chance that they're going to be a playoff team.
Yeah, there's no.
In their division. I don't think that. I would say my expectations would change, if we're just talking about win totals, very slightly. So, you know, I thought that they stole one in week one.
Yep.
They deserved to win that game. And they were very smart. Loved how well-coached the team looked. And they pulled it off, and that's great. This is more of a game, as you said a couple minutes ago, Scheim. This is a game that I had circled on schedule saying that's a gettable game. That's a vulnerable offense. You should be able to go out there and prove that your defense can win this game. So if my expectation changes, it would be instead of winning 5 games, they could win 7. And maybe it changes the timeline, which to me is the bigger part of this. It changes the timeline a little bit of when Drake May gets his first start or when he even gets into a game in mop-up duty.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I mean, if we're talking about win total, as you said, and win total also means draft position and, you know, a bunch of other things. But, like, if that's what we're talking about, absolutely this changes that. I had him as a 3-win team. Like, I had him not doing very well this year and trying to figure out their way through a up-and-down offense and, mostly down in a defense that has to do all the work in support of that. And it just seemed like that was not going to be a recipe for success. If they start off the season 2-0, sharp money's all over Seattle here. I mean, it's not like there's a lot of people expecting this team to really come out and do this. But I think that if they can start the year 2-0, regardless of what two teams it was against, that's going to change my expectations, definitely. And the fact that you got two pretty good teams here, I mean, the Bengals and the Seahawks both won 9 games last year, I think. So, like, you're not talking about the dregs of the league. You're not talking about another team that was picking high in the draft like you were that is expected to be doing that again. I was expecting them to be down there. I was reading those lists about them being the worst team in the league and mostly nodding my head in agreement, saying, yeah, I mean, this is going to be a whole process. and we're on step one of it. And I didn't expect step one to go smoothly at all. So 2-0, it's about as good of a start as you can have. That would definitely change my expectations.
Yeah, they were literally the odds-on favorite to have the worst record in football before week one, and that is not going to be the case. This team is not worse than that Carolina Panthers team. This team is probably better than that Vegas Raiders team. Like, this Patriots team is capable. Which is far more than I think a lot of people expected. I think a lot of people just expected just absolute ineptitude. And yet, you watch week one, and it's like, okay, they're well coached. They don't make a ton of idiot mistakes. The offensive line is halfway decent. So if they can be, you know what, 20th, 21st in offensive line play, like, this team will be successful. This team will get 5 wins. Easy.
They play a mostly clean game and, as you said, discipline. And I think that that eliminates one of the biggest question marks that fans had going into the season and even media had, which was, is Jerod Mayo, as a rookie head coach, and his staff, are they going to be able to even just get a professional, competent team right out there? And so, you know, and that's like a very sad standard to start at, but you at least got that. You at least got the answer to that last week. And I think that it paid off in a big way last week.
Yeah.
Now, last week, you were looking at an offensive line that performed above, well above expectations. And you were also looking at a team with a slightly injured quarterback, at least, and down one of their major weapons, and their other weapon in Ja'Marr Chase was limited. And so you had a lot of things working in your favor over there. We're waiting to see what the inactives of Kenneth Walker, the running back of Seattle, who I think had like 107 rushing yards last week.
Mm-hmm.
If he's going to be active, they elevated their backup running back. And so we'll see what, or they elevated a rookie running back to the
Zach
active
Charbonnet
list.
Is not going to scare you.
Frenchie.
So we'll see what they do there. But so maybe like you get your, you're getting a little bit of another break there. I'm not sure if that's really equivalent to what you dealt with last week on the other side.
Yeah, but you're also going to get a break in a couple weeks probably when you face the Dolphins, too. Like, as awful as that situation is, you're probably going to get the Dolphins without Tua Tagovailoa, which means you're going to draw Skylar Thompson, which is probably the most beatable quarterback you're going to face all year.
Or Mac Jones.
Okay, or McCorkle Ryan Jones. Tannehill. I mean, all of the above.
Or
I
Tom Brady.
Oh, God. Okay, that I don't want to see. But, like, you're going to get some backup quarterback who you can absolutely beat up on. And so there is, things are lining up for you right now in a way I didn't quite expect. Like, I expected that Miami game, you were just going to get destroyed. Now, it becomes a winnable game.
Yeah. Right, so, yeah, Ian Rappaport tweeted about an hour ago saying that Tua will be back when he and his doctors deem him healthy and ready. No timeline to return.
And no expectation to retire. He says he's not intending to retire. He plans to come back and play this
year.
That's what he wants to do.
Yeah, I don't think it's a smart idea to come back, especially this season. But I mean, if that's what him and his doctors decide to do, that's what they decide to do. It's just kind of a
yeah. And here's the thing: there's a clause in everyone's contract that if you have your career ended by an injury, then they have to pay you out. But if the team doctors clear you to play, then you want to retire, you're not going to get paid. So
correct.
There's this whole $120 million sitting on the table here, and they had an uphill battle for that anyway. But now if his own doctors are going to clear him, like, forget it. I mean, that's not even on the table anymore.
Yeah.
That's not even something you have to worry about. If he's going to try and rush to come back, that's a whole different thing. We'll get into more of that during inactives. You mentioned, Shime, that the Patriots' offensive line was half decent in week one. I would just contend that Jacoby Brissett had to take off running 7 times. He had 24 pass attempts. He had to take off running 7 times. And as we asked him back on Patriots Monday, none of those were designed runs. Those were all,
sure.
Oh, my God, I'm about to get killed. I'm running away.
Yeah, but plays break down all the time.
Yes. Also, Ramondre Stevenson, 120 yards. I believe 118 of them came after first contact, which means he was getting hit in the backfield a lot and breaking a lot of tackles.
A little note on that, though.
Yes.
So what they, I think, did that stat come from Next Gen or PFF or whatever it was? Was it just straight up NFL?
Honestly, don't remember.
Might have been Next Gen. What the league defines as contact is not necessarily a tackle, or it can just be somebody.
Hand contact.
Exactly. It can be
hand
as much.
Stuff.
It can just
hand
a little
stuff.
Bit hand stuff.
Everybody loves hand stuff.
Exactly. You know, just it could just, but it could literally just be someone grazing his jersey, grazing his shoulder pads.
Yep.
That's contact. And so I love that stat too because it Ramondre's a beast, and you see
awesome.
That watching him. But I do think that that's gotten now to the point where it's like it might be a little bit.
Okay. So let's even say it was like 1/3 of that. It's still a lot. I mean, that's still a lot of contact and having to break tackles. And not necessarily the point I'm trying to make in a long form here, not necessarily reflective of a great day for the offensive line.
Yeah, I understand that. But like at the same time, like Jacoby Brissett was smart, right? He did scramble when he had to. The plays break down. That happens across the NFL. I mean, he doesn't have the ability to scramble around and still throw the football like a Patrick Mahomes or a Lamar Jackson or, I mean, Josh Allen. We saw it on Thursday night. He's just on a different level when it comes to doing
Brissett
stuff like that.
I didn't think Brissett had the ability to scramble around at all. I didn't think he was, at this point in his career, I didn't think he would still do that.
Yeah, I mean, we saw, I mean, it's been years ago now. His rookie year, he had that long rushing touchdown here, that one game he started. But you thought that athleticism had kind of gone away in his older age. He's still able to move. He's not entirely a statue like I thought he was. And if he can do that, like, a positive play is a positive play. I will take a 3-yard gain on a broken play over a sack or an incompletion every time.
It's just when you look at the way that they played offense last week, and even if they develop a little bit more of a screen game or something this week, the margin for error is just tough. Because, yes, you're eating up the game clock and you're moving down the field and you get into the red zone and you hopefully can execute there, but you don't have any chunk plays.
Right.
Like, what is the last great chunk play that you can remember this team stringing together?
The Farrell Brown touchdown.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
51 yards or whatever it was.
And I remember we asked Mac, and he's like, I knew that play was going to work. And I was like, you probably should have run it a few more times.
Yeah, you knew
it. You were so confident it was going to work, man.
It's very difficult to... unless your defense is incredibly stellar, it's very difficult to play week in and week out and say, we just don't really have chunk plays. And maybe that's something that they're going to turn to. Alex Van Pelt, as you said, Chaim, he said that there were some plays that he took out and he wants to put back on the call sheet this week. So we'll see if there's something in there. It's just, once again, okay, who is that to?
I also think that it's going to be imperative that you get the ball in the hands of the quote-unquote playmakers that you have, like guys like Pop Douglas. Like, yeah, they're just going to have to make something happen after the catch. It's not going to be deep down the field shots that you're going to get chunk plays out of. It's going to be screens and those classic, like, Andy Reid slants where everyone else is blocking and you throw it to Pop Douglas and hope he can get extra yards after the catch. Or even Tyquan in that situation, right?
Yeah.
So that's how you're going to have to do it.
That all sounds great, but, I mean, listen, we watched that team try and throw the ball last week. It wasn't, that sort of offense wasn't happening, and I don't know if it's because the play calling wasn't right. I didn't love that whole thing from Van Pelt about the extra plays, but it's also a question of personnel. Like, who's a big playmaker on this team? They have three of them over on that other team. You know, all three of that. Lockett, I'd say, is definitely a playmaker. He's about as good of a fast possession receiver in the league. And Smith and Jigba and DK Metcalf are both playmaking wide receivers. Patriots may have one. And I don't even know if I'm convinced that Pop Douglas is one of those. I mean, I'd like him to be, but I don't know if he's that yet.
I'm also curious, Shyam, like, when you look at Christian Gonzalez, mm-hmm. and assuming he's going to be tasked with DK Metcalf, that can you think of him going up against a similar sized receiver?
No, I can't.
To me, that is one thing that's scary about that, because Gonzalez obviously has the athleticism to hang with somebody like Jamar Chase when he's kind of on a snap count and limited snaps, and you've seen him be very athletic and be able to hang with those guys. But when it's a big body like that, it's a different kind of
Which is why
population.
I think you need to look back. It's actually kind of perfect, right? You're facing the Seahawks. You're talking about Malcolm Butler. You need to kind of look back at that 2014 Patriots team and utilize kind of what they did with the Revis-Browner combo, where it's like, okay, I'm going to put Revis, it may not put him on their best receiver, I'm going to put him on their second best receiver and just take him off the field, right? So maybe you put Gonzalez on Lockett and you're just like, yeah, Lockett's not going to do anything today. Gonzalez is just going to lock him up, and then we're going to double
John
up on
Jones
DK Metcalf.
Or Marcus Jones is on Metcalf?
And with some safety help like Jabril Peppers or Kyle Duggar. Like,
those guys are so little.
I agree.
Those are little guys.
I don't disagree, but maybe that's the strategy you need to take. Like, I don't know how Gerard's going to approach it. I think that's kind of an interesting chess match there. And it'll be kind of, I'll be curious to see how they deal with that.
So Pop Douglas is the guy. If you think of all the offensive play, I guess let's throw Stevenson in there too, if we're talking about the pass game, Stevenson, Douglas, maybe Thornton on the right type of play. I mean, he's only ever had that one game with the two touchdowns.
I want to see more Antonio Gibson. I don't know why they don't throw in more looks to him. And I'm also curious, look, it's not like he's going to be, you know, blowing doors and be crazy out there. But I think that they did what they did last week because it continued to work. But I don't see why you can't diversify the running game a little bit with throwing Gibson in there and giving him more opportunities.
You think we see Javon Baker this week?
No.
No?
Doubt
He's still
it.
In the doghouse?
No, yeah. I think he... I talked to Hughes, the wide receivers coach, and it's... I don't know if it's even as much as doghouse as...
Underwood?
Just redshirt?
He's just fallen down that that depth chart so much because the hands are not consistently there right now, and that's just something that you can't have when you're supposed to be out there.
Also, he didn't really ever apologize for anything.
No,
he was just like,
did.
Yeah, you know, I didn't like it, and so I went on Instagram Live. So why? Was that a problem? And it's like, yeah, man, like that was kind of uncool. Like, if team has a relationship with the state police, maybe just chill out a little bit. He's like, nah, I don't feel like doing that. So that was that. I don't know. I mean, I was thinking in terms of trying to get the pass game going. You didn't really lean much on your guys last week anyway, so I don't necessarily see the need to start bringing new guys in there.
Are we going to have to expect more from Austin Hooper?
I thought Austin Hooper gave you about as much as I was expecting all year last week.
Right? Yeah, and it's interesting, right? Because your two tight ends aren't necessarily known for their blocking prowess. They're more receiving guys, so I wonder if that's going to be kind of how you get your mismatches, right? You get them with your two tight ends, your Hunter Henrys, your Austin Hoopers, and maybe that's how you get your chunk plays.
All right, couple of texts I want to read here. Texter in the 603 says, stop flip-flopping, Shime. You said for a month straight you can't win any games with Jacoby. These games are going to be no fun to watch with Jacoby. And now here you are saying that they can go 2-0.
Yeah, this 603 guy hates me. You can look through the rest of the texts. He's not a fan of mine. He texts every time I'm on the air. It's kind of, I'm kind of actually, I kind of respect it. But yeah, look.
Oh, yeah, wow, it's the same guy over and over again.
Jacoby Brissett, nobody.
You got a fan.
Yeah, I guess, or a hater, one of the two. Nobody thought it would be fun to watch Jacoby.
It's a thin line.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody thought it would be fun to watch Jacoby last week, and yet look what happened. They won the game. So it's going to be fun to watch the Patriots just about every week outside of that, maybe that San Francisco game. But like, I think this team, the defense is good enough, and the offense is at least capable enough that you can win grindy, kind of low-scoring games.
What do you guys make of the reports really quick? That they are giving Drake May so many more reps than a usual backup behind the scenes. When Jacoby's holding down the fort like he is, what do you make of that? Do you think that they are trying to ramp him up very quickly to appear early in the season?
So I think that this is, it's just all part of their plan, right? They have had a set plan the whole time. And I think for them, they had a week, they knew, whether it was week 5, week 6, week 9, whatever it is, they knew that date Drake May was starting regardless of, unless you're somehow like undefeated, which they probably didn't expect to be. Like, Drake May is going to start that day. And it's easier to do that if he has full reign of the playbook by then, right? And I think that's kind of another reason why Van Pelt didn't open up the playbook in week 1. I don't think that that was necessarily a bad thing. I think it's just a progression thing with the team. The only person on the entire team that knew the playbook was Jacoby Brissett. So they didn't want to throw everything at everyone right away, especially Drake May. So they incorporate everything little by little. He grows as the offense grows, so that when the offense is basically at 100%, and you swap Drake May and Jacoby Brissett, you never have to take your foot off the gas.
I mostly agree. I think that the plan was clearly that Jacoby was going to start early in the season, but I think it's a little bit more situational rather than, hey, we just have week 13 or some date circled on our calendar. We like this matchup. You don't even know what that team on the other side is going to look like or who your team is going to be. So to me, it tells me that they're trying to, whatever version of different kind of choose your own adventure situational plans that they had for him, they're putting them on the accelerator plan, and they want to get him out there because he continues to progress behind the scenes the way that they like.
You definitely want him to be ready, and I think that's a smart way of going about it. The only thing I think could stand in the way of this is if the Patriots keep like winning games. Like, say you get to week 5, right? That's a big
Miami game. You're 2-2.
Miami game, you're home. That's the big one everyone keeps saying. That's when you see Drake May the first time. You get to week 5 and you're 3-2. Right? I mean, that's a successful start to the season here with Jacoby Brissett. Do you want to? Are you so beholden to this plan for Drake May that you're going to maybe punt a game that Brissett, if he's playing well or well enough to win anyway? I mean, that's a delicate energy. You don't necessarily want to disrupt it.
Yeah, especially with the guys in the locker room. That's going to be the hardest part, is they don't want to be like, hey, we're winning games with a vet. Like, why are we going away from Jacoby? Which I get. But at the same time, they seem very firm in their plan. Whatever it may be, they have been very firm in it the entire time. They have not swayed. I don't think that they'll sway going forward, even if that is the case.
All right. In about 5 minutes here, we will be joined by Fitzy, who is live from the parking lot over at the tailgate. The Patriots last year, 1-7 at Gillette Stadium. They'll try and turn that around and match that total at the very least today. That's all coming up next. Ah, that highlight puts a smile on my face, doesn't it? Doesn't it put a smile on your face, Mego? Not really.
I love that. Reminds me of my youth.
Shime.
That is the best highlight. It's my favorite Super Bowl.
It was a great one.
28-3
was great, but at that last drive, and they mentioned it, that play right before where the ball bounced up his
Rashard
legs,
Matthews.
And I forget the guy who caught it, but yeah, it was a ridiculous play.
And for me, it's just like those first three, I was just slightly too young to really kind of enjoy them. But 2014, I had lived through the agony of losing in 07 and then losing in 11, where 14 to me was just the sweetest.
Well, I can tell you for sure it put a smile on the face of our next guest, who is most certainly not too young to appreciate those early Super Bowls, and that is our good friend Fitzy, who is live from the tailgate. What's going on, Fitzy?
Arkand, you're going to have to give me a warning before you play that highlight. That is NSFW in my world. I just went 6 to midnight, and I'm about ready to lose my mind, and we're still 2 hours from kickoff.
Fitzy,
that
is me.
No, I was just going to say, like, I call certain, like, highlights, I'll go back and listen to them or watch them on YouTube. That's sports serotonin. Like, to me, anytime I ever need to turn a frown upside down, I just go back and listen to Al Michaels' call on the Butler pick, and then all of a sudden, it's as beautiful as it is, live from the lots outside here at Gillette Stadium right now. You guys, this is a freaking postcard of a day outside Gillette. Sunny, 72, and the place is jamming. It's so great to see.
That's great to hear, and expected, obviously, with the beautiful weather we have today. Fitzy, this team was 1-7 at Gillette Stadium last year. It was not a tough place for opponents to play. Is that gonna change this year or what?
And actually, that win kind of felt like a loss
because the gritty that Mike
Gesicki did afterwards made us all feel like we had a lot of decisions that we regretted. The crazy thing is, so I've been here on the ground for like the last 2 hours, bouncing around, talking to people. Expectations haven't changed drastically amongst the fans, but they're all happy. Everyone just keeps echoing the same sentiment over and over again, like, they won last week. They made me proud. It was so great to actually see them play a kick-ass game and, you know, be representative of the region and shove it in the face of everyone who said all offseason long that they weren't going to win a game. And it's there's a vibe down here. I have people say this was probably the best tailgate they've seen, at least since the first Mac Jones game, if not back to the Brady days as well.
So
glorious.
Fitzy, it's become a bit of a habit at Gillette Stadium that, of course, the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy when the team is struggling. But it's become a habit to hear fans start chanting for the backup quarterback when the offense is struggling a little bit. Do you think that we'll get any of that today if the offense does not look as connected and smooth as they did last week?
Well, I think you know, Zappe got booed when he came in the preseason because they wanted May. Mac Jones got booed because they wanted Zappe, and he was underperforming years ago. So it's a familiar sentiment. But I think the one grace that could be bought, if you will, for Jacoby Brissett is going to be the fact that, you know, this really, if you look at it, maybe you guys have talked about it to a degree beforehand, but, like, this is kind of a Spider-Man meme game. Mm-hmm. These two teams are so eerily similar, it's ridiculous. All the way down to two youngest head coaches in the league, two guys that coach defense, replacing two legendary coaches, the two oldest coaches in the league, Super Bowl winners, and Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick. They both have ferocious defenses. They want to win on the ground. I think that's probably going to give Jacoby Brissett the leash or leeway he needs to try to make a couple of big passes today. I don't think we're going to hear, "We want May," or "Bring in May," yet. And it's also, you know, the vibe is so good here. People keep saying, "I got one game in September, and it's a perfect day. Nothing's going to screw it up." So hopefully that sort of gratitude, Mego, continues throughout the game.
So, Fitzy, you talked about there being like it being kind of like a Spider-Man meme, these two teams being similar. But do you get the sense that there's any kind of, I don't know, is anybody scared of the Seattle Seahawks? Like, are people nervous that DK Metcalf's going to go off today or anything? Because it doesn't necessarily feel like that's the case.
No, as a matter of fact, you know, Shime, you know, there's so many dads and guys down here like, "Hey, Fitzy, the first thing I had to do this morning was I saw that, you know, Kenneth Walker was out, so I had to put Chardonnay in my lineup." I was like, "My God, guy, you're my absolute favorite." I was like, "Please, can I be related to you? My God, let's do a 23andMe right now. You're my favorite."
I had a Chardonnay. What
of
it?
although Zach Charbonnet, not quite the runner between the tackles that Kenneth Walker is, but really good, got great hands, great in space as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if Geno starts feeling it, because the offensive line for the Seahawks is no great shakes either. I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, like a 5, 6, 7 catch kind of day for Charbonnet. But no, no one is down here saying, like, watch out, this could be the day that, you know, Lockett and Smith and Jigba finally go off. The Pats played well at every single level last week, Shime. You know, you had the safeties hitting like thunder. They recovered when they made mistakes. The corners were really good, and they got pressure last week. And, you know, Keon White's on pace for a 42.5 sack season. So, you know, again, both teams have every reason to worry about all the different strengths of the other team as well. It's going to be like, I always have to compare something to a movie. So for those of you out there that remember this one, this is going to be like the fight in They Live. It's just going to be just violent, just bloody, and it's old-fashioned football, just good old-fashioned smash-mouth football down here. Shime, you would also lose your mind. This place smells so good, I can't stand it. It's just like, it's a Yankee Candle of like like buffalo cheese dip and steak tips.
That sounds amazing.
It's borderline erotic. It smells so good down here.
That does sound nice. Fitzy, there's no real reason to care about this, but I do for some reason, and that is what of the current players on the team, what jersey are you seeing the most of? Because I'm wondering, who's selling any jerseys on this roster right now?
There are two. There are some zeros.
Okay.
And no, I'm not besmirching the good people of Pats Nation. There's a lot of there's a bunch of zeros.
Bunch of zeros.
I walked into that one, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yep. Bunch of freaking zeros walking around. This Patty's lame. Let's go. No, there are a bunch of zeros out here, which is good to see with Gonzalez. And again, I have shared this on social media a number of times. Drake May jerseys will never enter the top 10 in the NFL this year, even if he comes in, starts, and wins 5 games in a row, because everyone just held on to their Mac Jones and just duct taped May over the back of it. I've seen literally dozens of those today. I'm tired of taking photos of them.
Wasn't there a point?
Yeah, there's no buyback program.
I think there was a point in training camp. There was a report that he was signing one of these jerseys, a Mac Jones jersey. May was, and just laughing.
Yeah,
it was like, great.
Yeah, I think it actually made the past stories on Instagram as well. It's funny. You got to have a sense of humor about that as well.
So you're telling me
I'm expensive, Mago.
So you're telling me I'm the only one that's actually bought a Drake May jersey.
Have you now?
Yeah.
You may well be, Shime, and that's one of the many reasons why we love you, you big lug.
Good pun.
Very good. All right, before we let you go, I saw some pictures on social media this week, Fitzy, and looked like there's some sort of base being built over by the lighthouse, some sort of base that maybe you would put a statue on top of. Can you confirm or deny that?
I can indeed confirm that has probably been one of the biggest questions, aside from, hey, Fitz, you think we're going to win today, and can I get you a shot? I had to say yes and no to those questions, because we can't be slurring on the Jumbotron or on the Six Rings postgame show. However, the other question was, when's the statue going up and where's it going to be? And I think people are so ready. The final Brady catharsis will be when that statue goes up, because I think, A, it's going to be 12-foot-tall statue is like is pretty massive, number one. And number two, people are going to visit it. They're going to visit it, Arcand, and they're going to get emotional when they see it. Like, you know, like seeing Brady will remind you, you know, like I lost my dad a couple years ago. We love nothing more than watching the Pats play together and win Super Bowls. And like, I think people are going to visit it, and it'll be like the most photographed thing in Massachusetts for months, if not years. But I think people are going to go there and like have special moments as well, like grown men crying. It's going to be absolutely beautiful. So can't wait to see it, baby.
All right, Fitzy, thanks so much for the report from the tailgate, and enjoy your day, and we'll hear from you in the Six Rings postgame show later on tonight.
All right, I'm going to go squeeze in a couple of little necks and then give away some tickets for JetBlue. Let's go!
Sounds like a plan. That is Nick Fitzy Stevens, live from the parking lots down there. Man of the people, rubbing elbows, and it sounds like getting fed pretty well down there, too.
Always. Yeah. Always getting fed well at tailgates.
No kidding. All right, 617-779-7937. There's the phone number. When we come back, we'll be joined by Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston.